As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Time now for Mego and Shime on WEEI.
I heard that you don't let your assistant coaches wear championship merch from last year.
Is that true?
That is. Yeah.
They can't wear it like even at home? Are you policing them at home?
I wish I could, but I'm not. I mean, I would love to just like show up to one of their houses and like they see me through like the bedroom window and they have like a shirt from last season on.
What about fans? What about like hypothetically a podcast producer that wears, you know, 2024 Boston Celtics NBA champion shirts all the time? Is that person living the past?
I mean, clearly he doesn't want us to win or move forward.
And that's a good point.
That was a hypothetical.
He's living in the past.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Coach Joe Mazzulla on with Pardon My Take earlier this week. Doesn't want his coaches wearing last year's championship merch. It's not about the past. It's about going forward, looking forward. It's about this year. And the Celtics take on the Orlando Magic in the first round of the NBA playoffs. That game, the game one, is tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 over at the TD Garden.
Let's go!
How
Easter
excited are
Sunday.
You?
I'm really excited. Yeah. I have been closely covering this team and doing our weekly show, Celtics Weekly, on YouTube, and it's been like I have more fun in the regular NBA season than most people do, because I just genuinely really love basketball and NBA basketball. And I know that's not for everybody in the regular season, but now that we're in the playoffs, it is a totally different energy, a different level. I know people are like not totally thrilled about the first round of the NBA playoffs coming off the play-in tournament, but I'm just like, it's going to be a long road, hopefully, for the Celtics. We're finally back here. Let's see if they can repeat. They won't even say it themselves. They won't talk about defending the title and all of this. But we know that that is the challenge ahead of them that no previous five champions have been able to do in this league.
Yeah, and so I'm excited to watch this play. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think the Celtics are primed for a really good run. I think in all realistic expectations, like, you should be in the NBA Finals at minimum.
I
should be
so
there
too,
against probably the Oklahoma City Thunder, but, you know, maybe something crazy happens, but you should be there. And I'm excited to watch that run. I think it's going to be a little bit more challenging than it was last year,
yes,
which is also a little bit more exciting because it's not just going to be 4-1 series win, 4-1 series win, sweep, into the NBA Finals we go. Like, there's going to be actual, legitimate, competitive basketball ahead, barring the fact that the Celtics just rise to another level, which I think they might actually have. But, again, I think it's just going to be far more competitive than last year.
Yes. I would say for this first round, I do keep saying that I'm predicting a sweep.
Yeah,
so, maybe not this first round. And that's not to disrespect the Orlando Magic. They're just in a different stage of their development as a team. Paolo Banchero is still quite young.
Didn't you compare them to the Celtics from a couple years ago? at all? Because it feels very similar, right? Like where they're making that run, but they're not quite as developed as they want
to
be.
The issue with comparing anyone to those Celtics is those Celtics made the Eastern Conference Finals so early the year that Kyrie was injured. And nobody saw them getting there in 2018. So I feel like it's hard to compare anybody to those really early Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown teams because they overachieved quite early and then that was the expectation set. But with the Magic, what I like about them is like they've got this very 90s defense, junkyard dog attitude. Mm-hmm. And they're not the most polished team. They're not a good offensive team, but they're going to challenge you in your three-point shooting. Like if you're watching the Celtics-Magic matchup and you're sick of the three-point contests, this is probably the series for you.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really challenging the way that the Magic defense closes out on the perimeter and the pressure that they put on your shooters.
They're so long.
Yeah, the Celtics are going to have a variety of looks on offense.
Yeah, and so I'm excited to see kind of how they handle that in the first round. One of the things, though, I did want to discuss with you is you put out an article on WEI.com earlier this week, correctly?
A column.
Sorry. Not an article, a column. A column on WEI.com earlier this week claiming that Joe Mazzulla...
Claiming.
It is a claim.
Arguing.
Arguing Joe Mazzulla has a case for best coach in Boston sports.
Right now. Today.
I...
Respectfully?
No, I kind of agree with you.
Yes!
And it's only because I think for me the biggest kicker is that like Joe Sacco's clearly not in the discussion.
Right, unfortunately.
Alex Cora is probably the next closest just because I don't think Mike Vrabel counts it. He hasn't done anything.
You're projecting.
Yeah, with Mike Vrabel, it's all projections on what he will do. And with Joe Mazzulla, it's a litany of evidence. And then Alex Cora, you also have a bunch of evidence. And yeah, Cora's won a World Series, but there's also been a lot of bad seasons with Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox. And so I think Joe Mazzulla just has the advantage over him. So I actually tend to agree with you. Like, the best coach in Boston right now is Joe Mazzulla.
I'm not going to get into all of the specifics that I put in the column. If you want to read the column, it's on WEI.com. But my feeling why I wrote this week was kind of these dueling stories that I was following. One being the crazy emails that The Athletic and New York Times were able to get from UNC with Bill Belichick and thinking like, God, it's so weird. That guy held the crown. He was the king of Boston sports among coaches for 20 years.
Yep.
To the level that is really like a Red Auerbach. And it not just a generational coach, but a centennial coach.
Yeah, for sure.
And there was no competition. And now he's in this kind of bizarre chapter, in my opinion, of his career.
And then
looking at what's probably the exit interview with Sacco and the Bruins and thinking it's not one-to-one. It's not exactly the same. But Joe Mazzulla was in that interim Sacco position.
Mm-hmm.
And I was extremely skeptical and at times cynical of his rookie season as a coach and him getting that tabbed as a full-time coach and then coming up short, getting back to the finals. Like, I was tough on him that season. I don't think he's the same coach that he was.
No, he has grown.
He's grown a lot in every way. And I know everybody looks at the roster and says, well, how much of this comes down to front offices actually giving support with payroll in the roster? And Brad Stevens has done his job magnificently. He's the executive of the year last year. We all know why. But when you look at what they've done elsewhere besides the top guys on the roster achieving supermax deals and winning a championship, if you go down the roster and you see what Luke Kornet has developed from year to year to be in a real role player. I mean, a real role player. We used to look at going, yeah, what is your big insurance? You have Kristaps Porzingis, who's injury prone, and you have Al Horford, who's basically 60 years old in NBA years.
Still an athletic freak.
He doesn't play that way most of the time, but that's the reality of it. And to develop Luke Kornet down the depth chart and to develop Peyton Pritchard from a guy who everybody knows wanted out of town a couple years ago, and now he's going to be sixth man of the year, and he's one of the most exciting role players in the NBA. Like, if you don't think that that's coaching, and you just look at it and go, well, they pay guys and they roll the ball out, and that's the NBA, I just think it's such a massive discredit.
So you think that, because I think you're right. I think a lot of people would just give credit to Brad Stevens for acquiring these guys, finding the right pieces, whether it's Derek White or Drew Holiday or Kristaps Porzingis, and drafting guys like, you know, maybe Baylor Shireman becomes your next Peyton Pritchard-esque player who you develop and make into a sixth man of the year candidate, right? And so a lot of people want to give Brad Stevens credit, but in reality, like, Joe Mazzulla deserves a portion of that credit for having developed these guys and making them ready for the moments that they enter.
And again, like, look, this is years ago at this point. I was a big fan of Ime Udoka's coaching. I really was. I thought
he's done a great job in Houston.
He's a good coach, and I thought that the way that he connected with that particular roster was so impressive. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And then he did allegedly what he did, and the consequences were what they were. I actually think that the way that Mazzulla took over that team and was able to, again, with the roster support, able to get them to who they became and who they are now, that team loved Udoka.
Yeah.
Like, that team thought, Marcus Smart thought Udoka was coming back from the suspension. Like, to be able to assume the level of coaching that he has and connect with these guys, and that's so much of NBA coaching is managing the personalities. Like, I do think about the way that we used to talk about Eric Spoelstra. When Eric Spoelstra was coaching LeBron James, we were like, what a joke this is.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
LeBron can fire this guy anytime he wants and blah, blah, blah. And it was very disrespectful. And I think in a way that's kind of the evolution of a lot of these NBA coaches who don't have the NBA player background. And I'm not saying that Mazzulla is going to evolve into Eric Spoelstra, probably top three coach in the league. But I do think that he deserves credit for the track that he's been on. And we all just kind of write it off as, like, he's got wacky sound bites. He kind of sounds like a serial killer sometimes in his sound bites.
Great game,
and it's
by Jones
funny.
And Keith, by the way.
It's very amusing, but, like, at the same time, it's a great roster and it's great talent.
Yeah. But I think, like, if they go back to back again, he has to deserve even more credit. Like, you have to consider him in some of the best coaches in the NBA. He has to be in that conversation if they're able to go back to back. Because, I mean, you heard what Joe Mazzulla said on PMT, and then Jason Tatum this week at shootarounds was saying very similar things, where it's like, yeah, we won last year. Nobody can take that away from us, but we're focused on the Magic right now. We're focused on beating them right this second, and we're focused on the NBA playoffs. That's it. That's all that's on our mind.
We have a little update.
Okay.
On game one from our guy Justin Turpin, because he's over at Celtics practice right now.
Okay.
He just tweeted out this video. We'll grab it for you if you want to hear it later. But Joe Mazzulla says Jaylen Brown has been able to do everything in practice this week without limitations and will play in game one tomorrow. Ooh. Says he loves the week Jaylen has had.
All right. Well, let's get into Jaylen Brown coming up next here on Mego and Shine. We'll hear what Mazzulla said down at the Celtics practice facility. Thanks to Terp for getting that audio. Good job by Terp. He's great. He's hustling all the time. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Boston Celtics at all here. It's a full basketball hour with Mego and Shine on Boston Sports Original. But right now, Zach is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox beat the White Sox 10-3 last night at Fenway. Rookie Hunter Dobbins making his second major league start. He went 6 innings, allowing 2 runs, 1 earned on 3 hits while striking out 6. Trevor Story stayed hot. He went 3-for-4 with a pair of 3-run home runs. And here's what Red Sox manager Alex Cora had to say about his shortstop after the game.
When he's healthy, he's 30-30. You know, this guy's really good. So we haven't seen the healthy version of Trevor Story. My job is to keep him on the field, and I'll do my best. Plays, he produces, you know, and, you know, so far it's been fun to watch.
Game two of that 4-game set against the White Sox continues this afternoon when Garrett Crochet takes the mound opposite his former team for the second time this season, while Danvers native Shane Smith gets the start for Chicago. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Weil will get you started on the MassMutual pregame show. That starts at 3:10. Then Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks with the call of the game. First pitch set for 4:10. NBA play-in tournament wrapped up last night with the Miami Heat and the Memphis Grizzlies claiming the 8th seed in their respective conferences. Playoffs officially get underway this afternoon with Game 1 in the Bucks, Pacers, Nuggets, Clippers, Knicks, Pistons, and Lakers Timberwolves series. The Celtics, of course, will have to wait until tomorrow to kick off their pursuit of Banner 19. They'll host the 7-seed Orlando Magic in Game 1 tomorrow afternoon. Tip-off at the Garden set for 3:30. NHL playoffs also kicking off tonight with the St. Louis Blues heading to Winnipeg to take on the Jets. And Charlie Coyle and the Colorado Avalanche are in Dallas to take on Tyler Seguin and the Dallas Stars. My name is Zach Cohen. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Mego and Shime coming up after this.
This is Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Following that up, Jalen's preparation this week, everything go according to what you thought it would be, and how good do you feel about him being ready to go?
Yeah, it looks good. They would do everything, no limitations. It's been great physically, mentally, ready to prepare himself, ready to go. So, love the week that he had.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original. That was Joe Mazzulla talking about Jalen Brown, no limitations. According to Joe Mazzulla, that audio courtesy of our guy Justin Turpin. Mego, do you believe that Jalen Brown has in fact had zero limitations and is totally and 100% ready for round one of the NBA playoffs?
Not 100%, but practice earlier this week, it was kind of interesting. Kristaps Porzingis, he's probably a little bit more transparent than a lot of guys.
I would say very much more transparent.
And he talked about how we asked him about, he had said after the Knicks game, like, oh, you know, maybe I'll talk to Jalen, because Jalen looked so not himself in that game. Yep. And was clearly banged up. And so we followed up and we're like, hey, did you actually have that conversation with Jalen? And he said, yeah. And, you know, he seems like he did what he had to do to get healthy. And one thing that he said that I thought was interesting and honest, and those guys are good friends, was he said, Jalen always says he's feeling good. He always says he's feeling good, but he actually looks good right now. And I'm like, okay, that does feel honest, that you're like, this guy's mentality is always that he's going to be out there. He's, mm-hmm. But you can watch him grind through it, and you're not seeing that in practice this week. I feel like that went a little unprompted at the end of a answer, which is usually where you get the most honesty from players. And so I like that. For me, I still look at this series where I think my outside judgment is that it's going to be a sweep. So how much do you need to push Jalen?
Well, so I think that's the question too, right? If the Celtics are getting up big and early, you can rest him more, right? It's like, let's just get more minutes for Pritchard or whoever, get them out there, Sam Hauser, whatever, keep Jalen on the bench a little bit longer so that he's not overexerting, right? He's not making anything worse. He's still getting in, getting minutes, and it's like, all right, big lead in this game, you know, 25-point lead. All right, Jalen, take a seat. Like, we're fine. And just make sure you're ready for round two when, theoretically, the tougher opponent will show up.
I think the way that they're approaching it right now is all about, it's so dumb to say, but mindset, where if they went in it the way that you just described, mm-hmm. there is a chance then that they start to get smoked physically and defensively by the Orlando Magic, because as much as we look at these teams and we're like, the Celtics are a much more complete and experienced team and have talent at every level compared to the Magic, who are like 27th rating in their offensive production this year, or at least from three-point shooting. They were last in the league. Like, they're still a good NBA team.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
And so I don't think I think the way that they're approaching it right now, at least outwardly saying, is the right thing. Being like, hey, Jalen's on no restrictions and he feels great and we're going in eyes wide open. Like, getting to the second round is a blessing and moving beyond that is a challenge. Like, that's all the right stuff and the right way to approach it and think about it. It's just realistically, there is that balance of like, just don't do something stupid with any of these stars early on.
100%. And I mean, you kind of look at it. We've said before, even without Jalen Brown, the Celtics should beat the Magic in 5 games, right?
Yeah. Like, I think without Jalen, it would go 5.
Yeah. I look at how healthy and effective Kristaps Porzingis has been down the stretch here, and I'm not worried at all. Like, I'm like, oh, between Tatum and Porzingis.
I got a knock on wood for that when you're invoking Kristaps Porzingis' health.
To his credit, he has looked awesome in the last month or so. And so, like, I'm very excited to hopefully, again, knock on wood, see a whole playoff run from Kristaps Porzingis. I think he is, to me, kind of the X factor for the Celtics. Like, Jaylen and Jason are the two best players. They're awesome. We all know that. There's no question to that. But to me, what Porzingis brings and the way he stretches the court and, you know, when he's shooting threes from the logo, and he's your center. This is the guy who can play in the post and also shoot threes from the logo.
He is so much fun that he says, you know, I tried shooting closer to the three-point line because I tend to just drift back. I tried getting closer, and my efficiency was the same, so I just figure I'll stretch the defense out even further and shoot that deep. And it's like, dude, you are such a cheat code when you're good.
It's awesome.
Like, you really are. And Chris, I want to bring the energy that Kristaps Porzingis brings to the Celtics to every department of my life.
Yeah.
Where he's like, do you know how easy this is for me to play with Jaylen and Jason? Do you know how easy that he's like Will Hunting in Good Will Hunting, where he's like, holds up the flaming piece of math equations being like, do you know how easy this is? That I can do this in my sleep. Like, I love that from him.
He has the greatest attitude. He's the best. I love Kristaps Porzingis. He's been one of my favorite Celtics players in quite a long time, just because of his personality, the way he interacts, and the way he just plays. Like, it's fun to watch the Celtics
to win with meat. Is what he told us earlier
yes.
this year.
Well, yeah. I think he confused the saying pound of flesh, right? That's what it was?
Yeah. I think we spent like half of a segment talking about Shakespearean idioms.
Yes. Yes, we did. We even had callers weigh in and explain it to us because we had no idea.
It was
what was
a tough look for you being like a big Shakespeare guy.
Yeah, I didn't know that's where that saying came from. But you know what? It's okay. You learn something new every day, Mego. The important part is about gathering that information and storing it for later, you know? But I look at this Celtics team and to me, round one, easy. Then you get to round two and you're looking at the Knicks or the Pistons. I feel like I'd rather see the Knicks just because you kind of own the Knicks. Jalen Brunson, sure, he could go for 45 in a game, but they don't scare me at all. The Pistons are kind of similar to the Magic in that they're going to be aggressive. Like, they're not going to. They're younger. They're not as experienced. They have far surpassed what they did last year, and they are a totally different basketball team. And so they're just going to be a little bit more frisky than I think a Knicks team is. But again, a game you should win, right? You're really not going to have a game or a series that you should feel threatened by until you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, where theoretically you're probably seeing the Cavaliers.
Probably. I do think about this. The most interesting part of this is going into the NBA playoffs is something that Wiggy said when I was on with you guys on the Greg Hill mm-hmm. show a couple days ago, talking about the potential for a career-changing moment for Jason Tatum here. And I say that in a way that makes me feel like my own skin is crawling listening to myself, because Jason Tatum is already a superstar and in my book already a top three player in mm-hmm. the league. But if he has just a dominant finals run and wins finals MVP, I think Wiggy was right in saying that catapults him into even a different level of superstardom for the NBA at large. Because I think that there still is, people say like disrespect. I think of it more of a reservation from fans outside of Boston about Jason Tatum. The idea is like, well, Tatum is an all-around great player, but he's always been on good teams, and he plays for a fantastically organized franchise, and he's got every support system possible. And so it's not like it's disrespect, but it's just like, well, how tough has it been for him? And if he's in this point where he's got to pick up a little slack because Jaylen's out, and it does become more of his show in this playoffs run, I agree with Wiggy. Like, it could be a different kind of moment for him.
So I ask, and so I would counter that with, but what happens if he's good throughout the playoffs but never kind of blows your socks off, and then you get to the NBA Finals and, you know, Porzingis goes off in the NBA Finals and wins Finals MVP?
Then I think he stays status quo of where he is now. Don't
you think more haters start to crawl out of the woodwork, though? Like, look, now it's back-to-back finals where he didn't even win MVP.
If you're a superstar, you have haters no matter what.
Yeah, of course.
No matter what. Do I think that Tatum has, like, considerably more haters than other NBA stars, superstars.
They're almost more like...
Like, nobody has the haters that LeBron had when he went to Miami. And I say that as somebody who's not thrilled by LeBron ever. Nobody has as much haters as Kevin Durant when he went to Golden State. Like, that's serious haterdom. I don't think that Tatum has had to deal with serious haterdom. Again, it's just more of a reservation, more of a blasé attitude about
him. I think
him.
That's kind of what it is. It's that blasé attitude. They're like, yeah, he's Jason Tatum. He's good, but he's just also on a really good team and a really good franchise.
We just celebrate him so much here that it's irritating to people to go to look elsewhere and go like, why is everyone, why last year, was it last year or the year before when everyone was like, Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan. Yeah. And it's like, no, I mean, not really.
Not even close.
I mean, Anthony Edwards is fun. There's some interesting game chance going on at games if you've tuned in to an Anthony Edwards game recently. But it's like he's a fun player and he's got a big personality and people are excited by somebody new.
I just think, so with that in mind, right, Jason Tatum could change the narrative around him with a dominant run to the finals. I think it's interesting, too, the amount of different storylines you could see play out in the NBA playoffs with, like, because I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can do the exact same thing that Jason Tatum can do, where if he just goes on this dominant run through the Western Conference and then wins an NBA title and wins finals MVP, like, and tacks on the fact that he could be the probably the MVP of the entire NBA this season.
He would become undeniably number one.
He would be undeniably the best player in basketball. I think you also look at Luka and LeBron with the Lakers.
What a year for Canada that would be.
Oh, for SGA, that would be an amazing year for Canada, I guess. You know, but then you look at the Lakers with Luka and LeBron, like, that could solidify LeBron as arguably the, you know.
Nope.
Some people would say the GOAT. Some people would just say number two.
Don't you say it.
But again, like, that's another title that LeBron adds to the cabinet. And Luka could theoretically be a catalyst in that. And then then of course you have Steph Curry as a 7 seed trying to make yet another run. Paul Pierce was arguing the other day that if he wins another title, he could be better than LeBron.
Curry?
Yes.
Well, to me, that's just a non-starter because I just don't think that's happening.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably not happening, but crazier things have happened. Jimmy Butler's getting hot. You don't like Jimmy Butler in the playoffs?
I love Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, but I don't see that from that
team. Do you think it's just going to be chalk, like Thunder Celtics in the finals?
No.
No?
No, because the West is crazy.
Okay.
And when we say that the Cavs are a real challenger, they're a real challenger. The Celtics should get back to the finals. That should be the goal. Once you're in the finals, anything can really happen.
Sure.
Like, but getting back to the finals should be the goal for the Celtics. I do think that the Cavs are for real, and everybody's kind of turned their nose up at them all year long, even when we see Donovan Mitchell be a superstar against you and dig out of these crazy holes that they put themselves in. Like, that is a mentally tough team on top of being a good basketball team. They're annoying. They don't go away in games. And if you're in a 6 or 7 game series with them, they're not going away in that series either.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, I don't think that you can just pencil in like, oh, this is chalk. And out West, it's crazy out there. I don't know what's going to happen with Luka and LeBron in the playoffs. I don't know even, you know, if the Clippers are going to get feisty. Probably
not.
They've been
hot last month of the season.
They're probably not going to get feisty. What's Ime Udoka going to will his Houston Rockets to do? I don't know. Like, is OKC still too young, too early? They were last year. I think they're much more developed and talented this year. But out West, anything could happen. I'm just so glad that the Celtics don't have to deal with that until the finals, because it's wild out there.
The East is so much easier than
the West.
It's not even close. Because you look at the West and it's like, all right, the Grizzlies, pretty good basketball team. The Thunder, awesome basketball team. Clippers Nuggets should be a great series between, you know, arguably the best player in basketball and Nikola Jokic versus a Clippers team that has played insanely well over the last month and a half with Kawhi Leonard and everything. And then you look at the Lakers and Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards versus Luka and LeBron. And then you have the Rockets team, who I think is probably a little bit too young to really kind of make that push. But again, you point out Ime Udoka, exceptional coach. He might be able to make some things happen. And then, of course, you have Steph Curry. Like, it's just that West is insane compared to what you're dealing with in the East.
Yeah. So I think it's like the round one is never the most exciting part of the NBA playoffs, but getting into it, it could get interesting out West. I feel good about the Celtics going against the Magic. I do have them in four. It's not disrespect to the Magic. It's just they're still a little banged up. They are still early in their development phase compared to the Celtics. I just don't really think it's a threatening matchup.
I'm going to go Celtics in five. I think they'll probably lose game two, just like they did a couple times last year. It's just one of those things. They'll win big in game one, lose game two in a close one, just because Orlando's going to throw something at them that they weren't prepared for. They'll adjust and then win two down in Orlando and win the final one coming back. So that's kind of my guess where the Celtics are. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Boston Celtics. You can also weigh in on the New England Patriots, who we talked about all first hour. But coming up next, final segment of Mego and Shime. We're going to pivot a little bit. Mego has a movie and TV-related question for me. We will get to that next here on Mego and Shime.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. We've talked a lot of Pats today, a little bit of NBA playoffs, Celtics Magic, which kicks off tomorrow, game one, 3:30 over at the Garden. But Mego, you told me before the show you're excited to see the movie The Sinners.
The movie
Sinners, starring Michael B. Jordan, directed by Ryan Coogler. And you had a question regarding, like, vampires and zombies?
Okay, so I was thinking about this week because I want to see Sinners. It's this new Michael B. Jordan movie, and it's a vampire movie.
Okay.
I don't know if it's totally, like, classically vampire, but it's getting extremely good ratings. It has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's supposed to be awesome. So I'm into that. I couldn't get anyone on Christmas to see Nosferatu in theaters with me, even though I kept telling my family it was a Christmas movie because there was snow. And I do think part of it happened over the holiday season. And they were like, no, we're going to go see the Bob Dylan movie, which is fine. But also this past week, the HBO show The Last of Us came back, which I know you know the video game.
Correct.
And you watched season one of. I also watched season one of, and I thought it was really good. But I'm not typically a zombies person.
Okay.
I don't really like the zombie genre very much.
All right.
And I'll get into why, but I wanted to ask you because I feel like vampires had a really long moment in pop culture, and some of that was Twilight level moment.
Yeah, but then also Vampire Diaries, the originals, you know?
Yeah, it had a long moment, and then it got a little zombified with The Walking Dead and zombies go back to the, what are those, like, George Romero movies?
Oh, yeah. The Night of the Living Dead, like, Shaun of the Dead.
I've never seen those. I'm not really about zombies, but I wanted to ask you, because you, like me, also like this, like, twisted pop culture side.
Definitely.
So are you more of a vampire person or a zombie person? And what do you think of those two groups have put out better content?
So I think, movies wise, it's probably I think the zombies in general put out better content. I'm a huge Walking Dead stan. I love The Walking Dead. I've seen
You're in the whole universe.
Yeah, I've watched Fear the Walking Dead. I've watched the regular Walking Dead from front to back. I even read some of the Robert Kirkman graphic novel. I've even been interested in diving into, like, some of the spinoffs from Walking Dead. So I love Walking Dead. I think there are some good zombie movies. Of course, there's bad zombie movies. Like, there's bad every type of horror movie.
Right.
So I think that is also in play. I think zombie movies are fun because sometimes you can just make it like people are just like murdering faceless hordes, which is sometimes fun in movies. And it can be comical and it can be it's a little lighter than some of your other horror style movies, which is good. I think overall zombie content is better. Maybe I'm just poisoned by Twilight. I just think Twilight is silly and dumb.
Twilight sucks.
It had its moment and good for it. But like, I was not a Twilight guy. And so maybe that's probably why.
But Twilight wasn't horror.
No, it wasn't. Not at all. It was like
My issue with zombie stuff, other than I don't like watching people eat each other. And I don't like the, like, brain-eating side of it.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Interesting.
No, thank you. But I do also feel that there's the stakes with zombies is kind of always the same, which is this zombie crisis is so bad that it's the end of the world in one way or another. Like, we're basically, it's apocalyptic.
Yep.
And we're just trying to hold on to humanity as best we can, knowing that eventually we're getting outnumbered by these zombies. Mm. And I feel like it's always the same stakes that way. Whereas with the vampire side, a lot of it is like, oh, let's look at this community. It's kind of a comment on commentary on society and like the other and this person coming in. And there's a little bit of this like desire element, or somebody gets kind of, I don't know, like wooed into the whole vampire side of it. And then you can also have different kinds of vampires where you can have like a very sexy vampire, which is like the Anne Rice style, like Interview with the Vampire, where it's like, well, this is a beautiful but evil person.
Yep.
And then the other side, which is like Nosferatu, which is just like a gross demon thing.
Yeah.
That's just creeping around and destroying a community.
Blade vampires, also good.
I've actually never seen Blade.
Ooh.
Is it Please. Good?
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is the best.
Okay.
That was like the original Marvel comic movie.
Really?
One of them, yeah. Because Blade is technically a Marvel character. It wasn't...
He's like a vampire slayer, right?
Yeah, so he's like a... I believe, if my lore is accurate, I believe he's like a hybrid... part vampire and but like also part human, and he can go out and he just, so he has these crazy abilities and then can also just slay vampires.
Okay, interesting.
And he uses that katana or sword. I don't know if it's technically a katana, but regardless. So I mean, vampires, you're right. I think you can probably craft a better story with vampires, but I think Walking Dead probably recognized that. I think one of the reasons the show is so successful is it pivoted a couple seasons in and a couple books in, like, it pivots away from humans just trying to survive against zombies to, okay, we've now survived and started these colonies or, just kind of habitations.
Habitats for humanity.
Yeah, basically. There's just, like, small sects of people that have now figured out how to survive against zombies, and now the people are clashing. And so it's more a person versus person in a apocalyptic zombie-ridden world. And I think that's probably what made them successful, is they kind of pivoted away. But I think you're right. In a lot of zombie cases, it is just like, all right, we're in a race against... It's just humanity needs to survive. We need to find a cure. We need to find a vaccine for it or whatever. And so I understand that it can be probably a little bit repetitive. Yeah, so you're probably right. Being able to craft... I just don't think that many people have done a great job at crafting great vampire stories.
What about Dracula?
Hey, okay.
One of the originals.
Yeah, I know. That's an old one. Okay. Dracula's fine. Like, you know, it's
I
not
really...
Great.
Have you ever...
Nah, I want to suck your blood.
Have you ever read or watched the original miniseries of Salem's Lot by Stephen King?
No, I have not.
That's a great one. Mm, okay. That one is like really, really well done. The book is really good. The original miniseries, not the one, I think they put out a movie version of it like last year on streaming. Don't do that. But the original one, I think it's from like the 80s. I watched it as a kid, and it's really well done. Like most Stephen King stories, it feels like very true to life.
All right. There you go. That's Shimon Mego's quick zombie vampire horror minute for you. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we'll make this a thing. We'll just continue diving into our scary movie stuff, and it'll be an excuse why I can drag my husband to the theater.
The other scary movie I'm interested in seeing, I think it's coming out soon, is Until Dawn. Did you see that one?
That sounds like vampires.
No, they're like trapped in a... I think it's Until Dawn. They're trapped in a house, and they die a bunch of times, and every time you die, you get sent back, but you die from a different type of horror element. So it's a slasher, or zombies, or paranormal. It's all kinds of stuff.
Did you play that game, Until Dawn?
No, I did not.
So they completely went away from the plot of the game. It's kind of like a butterfly effect game, and it's a completely different plot, which I was talking to Stiz about it because he's a big horror game, horror film guy. And
yeah.
We were both pretty upset that they went away from the plot of the game to go with the like time loop stuff.
Interesting. All right. Well, that'll do it for Mego and Shime here. Thanks so much for hanging out on a Saturday afternoon. Beautiful weather outside. Go enjoy it. And if you're driving around today, keep it locked right here on 93.7 WEEI. Because Rob Bradford, the Baseball Isn't Boring program, going to get you ready for Sox and White Sox tonight. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.